Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see? Pick up the mirror now, America. Go ahead, pick it up. What are you, afraid? It's just a mirror, America. What could it do to you except reflect your image? The Majority Report.
It is Monday, February 7th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Excuse me. Hopefully, my the frog in my throat will not affect the quality of the sound that seems to be coming now from my new SM. What is the name of this? SMB 70?
7B.
The point is, I am speaking to you now from a brand new microphone sent to us by an incredibly generous listener. And I have given him or her, I don't even know, that's how anonymous this person is. I have given them naming rights, and they said they wanted me to refer to the microphone as Lindsey Graham. Now, that was not what I expected. So we may call it the Graham or the Lindsey Graham, I'm not sure. It would be awkward to always refer to the microphone and then have to, but be that as it may. So welcome to the program. Another great week of broadcasting and podcasting. And I must tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that we are getting very close to the day where we will be sequestering the post show. So for those thousands of you who listen to the show on a regular basis, you will be receiving the first 40 minutes or so, and then the after show will be for members only. We've yet to name it. Maybe we'll just call it the members only show. Not quite sure, but you have almost 10 days, 8 days, 9 days to become a member at Majority Report, or at MajorityReportRadio.com. We'll take you there, but Majority.fm. Become a member today. One of the bonuses you will receive is, of course, you will get a full, at least hour and a half of programming. That's generally what I do on a daily basis. And, of course, depending on what level you get DVDs. You can always get that Bush pardon video, maybe a mouse pad. And soon we'll be also releasing for members-only content. It's just such a wonderful opportunity for you. Let's dive right in. We'll talk a little bit of Egypt. There are people again in Tahrir Square. There have been negotiations that have been ongoing over the past couple of days, but the protesters in Tahrir Square have at least one specific demand. That is, Mubarak must go, and go now. And it does not appear at this moment, anyways, that the protesters will accept the Vice President Suleiman, who is a renowned torturer. But some interesting clips for you. Egyptian journalist Mona Elahwahe,
I've been saying Altahawe.
Altahawe. She is defending the Egyptian revolution with Bill Maher, who is, you know, clearly was impressed with her. But this is one of the talking points that seems to have, you know, sort of risen to the surface. And it's not without any merit, but let's hear this clip from the Bill Maher program on Friday night, because this is one of the things that we're starting to hear more and more about what comes after this. If, assuming this revolution is successful, assuming they are able to oust Mubarak. This is also, we've had more and more reports of journalists being beaten, being detained, and intimidated, and it's still not clear where this thing is going to end. But let's play this clip right now.
No, the reality is we have a succession of old men in the Arab world that your administration have been supporting, and that your administration know are dictators that encourage this kind of conservative thinking because they have shut down every kind of opposition to their rule except opposition based on religion. Mm-hmm. What we're seeing in Egypt today is young people going out in the street and saying, we are done with these old men. And you know how these old men are reacting? Did you see the interview yesterday with Egypt's vice president, who, by the way, used to torture for the U.S. administration
right.
in their rendition program?
Suleiman.
Exactly. Omar Suleiman.
The Octomom, Suleiman.
Omar Suleiman, who was just as bad as Hosni Mubarak. And he was sitting there. Christian Amanpour was asking him, what if the demonstrators don't go home? He says to her, we're going to call their parents up and tell them to go home. And I'm like, fuck you, okay? What? Because this entire revolution, I'm fired up here.
Yeah.
This entire revolution
is about telling
these old men who have strangled our countries, fuck you. It's time to leave. And I'm telling your administration, let them go. And let us. Let us take our country back.
Right.
So, you know, all these, there's all these myths about the Arab world, how we like the strong leader, how we're lazy, how we're passive. What we're witnessing in Egypt right now is the demolition of these myths. You've got people out there, being camels and horses, for God's sake.
Right.
And they're saying, we still want freedom, and they're going to get it.
No, okay. And that's, okay, I'm on your side. I want this to happen. I at least worry about the religiosity.
I worry about it too, of course.
You should. I mean, you're a woman. I mean, if the other side, I mean, the country I would compare Egypt to, I haven't heard this a lot on the news because it's not an Arab country, but it's Iran. There's another country with a great history, a lot of smart people, you know, a lot of pride. They had a revolution, but it got hijacked. Thugs stole their revolution.
Yes.
And that could happen in your country,
we're
too.
We're watching very closely. And because you know what inspired what happened in Egypt? You mentioned Tunisia. This tiny, brave little country called Tunisia
right.
that basically set the Arab imagination on fire. Just 10 million people, it took them 29 days to demolish a dictatorship of 23 years. So basically, Arabs are sitting there going, oh my God, we can get rid of these old farts. Let's do it, you know?
But yeah, and this is really more about jobs, right, and the economy and living a normal life than it is about religion.
Absolutely. It's about dignity, Bill.
And Bill Maher gave some percentages there, some polling, which suggests that the population in Cairo is, in many respects, adheres to some rather... difficult Muslim laws from our perspective. But you know, this polling and the point that she made during this interview was that this stuff is not going to go away. I mean, there is no reason to believe that another 30 years of dictatorship in that country, and listen, I don't think that we should be under any illusions as to what will come out the other side. The military seems to be driving this entire process there, and they seem to be the strongest institutional force in Egypt. And to the extent that Mubarak, there's chances of Mubarak leaving and a new government forming, a more democratic one, it is still going to be under the auspices in some respects of this military. So we're going to see some incremental move towards a form of democracy there, not an American democracy, but we don't have a form of American democracy anywhere per se, and that's not necessarily a bad thing in some instances. But Bill Maher expressed some concern about the Muslim Brotherhood, and we've spoken in the past that the Muslim Brotherhood has sworn off violence as of 1970 or thereabout. They are arch enemies with Al-Qaeda, yet they are a fundamentalist Muslim organization, and they will undoubtedly have more influence in a coming government. But the bottom line is that element is not going to go away. And in fact, I think she argues that one of the best ways to move into the 21st century, I guess, are we in the in the 21st century, right? Or the 22nd. Into this new century is to have more democratic control, because she made the point, and there are others who have made this point. I just listened to an interview with Noam Chomsky that the notion of, or the fear or the concern of religious extremists in that area has always been used as a means of suppressing people and their desire for more freedom and democracy. They have always used and have probably encouraged to a certain extent a certain amount of fundamentalism as a means in which to control their populations. And so it is no coincidence that we are seeing and hearing more of the danger that the Muslim Brotherhood poses to America, to a Western civilization, to Egypt themselves. We hear this over and over again. They are being used in the same way they have always historically been used. And here is Elliot Spitzer interviewing Mohamed Morsi. He is the spokesperson for the Muslim Brotherhood. And you can listen to the Muslim Brotherhood's position, make your own judgment here. But again, you know, this is somewhat academic from an American standpoint. I mean, while we have some influence with the military there, at the end of the day, we are not in a position to dictate to these people what kind of government or what kind of system they have. And it's not like these Muslim Brotherhood have magical powers where they can convince everyone through hypnosis in Egypt that they should live under some type of Sharia law if they don't want to. So to a certain extent, this is more about edifying ourselves than it is about calling for some type of resolution upon our terms. But this is not an equivalent situation to Iran. That was a very much a an anti-American revolution. And I think while there is an argument on the streets that Americans have helped, and a legitimate one, helped prop up the Mubarak government. And while it doesn't help that anti-Mubarak protesters are being suppressed by tear gas made in the United States, with flyovers from jets made in the United States, with tanks that have been made with American dollars and American know-how, this still fundamentally is not an anti-American movement. This is a movement against Mubarak. So let's play this clip.
So if the Muslim Brotherhood had a significant position in the parliament, or your candidate for president were elected, would you observe and continue to uphold the peace treaty with Israel?
Yeah, let's talk about this in some details. If you want to talk about the peace treaty with Israel, this has to do with the parliament. The parliament comes from the people well. Then the opinion of the parliament must be respected. Now, if you talk about the past 30 years in this treaty, the Israeli hasn't respected the treaty. In the beginning of the treaty, in the introduction, it talks about comprehensive peace. Where is comprehensive peace?
Let me ask the very simple first question. If you're the Muslim Brotherhood, had a major role in the government, or if your candidate were the president, would you continue to recognize the existence of the State of Israel?
Well, the State of Israel is already registered in the United States. We are talking about the Palestinian state now. Do you recognize a Palestinian state or not?
Well, I'm asking
you. Does the Israelis recognize a Palestinian state or not? What can we do about a state that's registered in the United States now?
Mr. Morsi, I understand what you're saying, but I'm asking you again a simple question, which I think can be answered yes or no. I'm not trying to be tough on you, but would you recognize the State of Israel if your candidate for president were elected tomorrow? Would you recognize the State of Israel?
Sir, this is an iffy question. You want to talk about the future, and you do not look into the past and the present. This is an easy question. It's out of phase. It's ridiculous to ask about the future. Why you don't have even your freedom in your country, and you are pushed by the foreign policies of the United States against the Palestinians and the others. The blood is shed from the Palestinians for more than 60 years. Let us stop the bloodshed of the Palestinians first, and then talk about such matters in the future.
So there you have it. I mean, clearly there is the Muslim Brotherhood is going to the extent that they have an increased significance or influence within the new Egyptian government, if one actually comes to pass, their position is clear on this. And frankly, I don't think that they're wrong. This is not a position that is, frankly, wildly out of touch with much of American Jewry, frankly. There are many of us who believe that the Israelis have failed to address the question of independence for a Palestinian state. There are many of us who believe that the Israelis continue to occupy Palestinian lands. And if you look back to those Palestinian papers, which were released just days before this movement began in Egypt, which sort of got lost in the shuffle, frankly, you will see that the Israelis have not been bargaining in good faith. And there has been many occasions where the Palestinians have offered up just about everything. And frankly, the release of those papers was very detrimental to the Palestinian Authority, because it surely undercut their legitimacy with their own people to see just how much the Palestinians are willing to give away. So while there certainly is reason to be concerned, if you were Egyptian, I think you'd be less so with the idea that Mubarak would be gone. Far less so. We know that 1 in 7 people from Cairo, a city of 7 million people, were at those protests this past week, which is not to mention the protests that are going around the entire country, which we have far less access to. And the reason why we have far less access to those is because of the Egyptian government's systemic plan for brutalizing and intimidating journalists. So there you have it. So just be on the lookout that you're going to hear that more and more, as there is attempt to push back on any U.S. attempts, to the extent that there are any. We just don't know for sure. Any attempts to help with the ouster of Mubarak, and to do so in a way that does not allow the Mubarak regime, sans Mubarak, to maintain control. Now, I was reading on Twitter just an hour ago, within the last hour, that there is conflicting reports as to the release of Wael Ghonim. You remember I spoke of him the other day. He had been appointed spokesperson by essentially a Facebook protest movement that has been in existence for over a year, of young people, and he seems to have been adopted by many other groups as part of this protest as a way of establishing where he is. He disappeared on the 25th. He is the Google executive and an activist who has disappeared. There has been conflicting reports as to whether or not he has been released. So we will continue on this story. We will have a guest to discuss it over the next week, and we will continue to follow these things. I just wanted to point out that I'm hearing more and more over the past couple of days of this existential threat that the Muslim Brotherhood presents. And first of all, I think it's completely overblown in terms of America. They have been over there, and remember, these people have existed as an organization since 1928. So this is not a new part of the sort of rise of extremist Muslim groups. They have been in existence since 1928 and have sworn off violence for over 30 years. So we shall see. And you see continued unrest in the entire region. And we will follow this. But first, we will take a break, and we will be back in just a moment. Back, Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Just a little housekeeping, cleaning. House cleaning. You have until, I believe, the target date is either Tuesday or Wednesday, and we will be sequestering the post show for our members only. So now is the time for you to join up with the Majority Report. Become a member so that you do not miss any of the show. I also want to remind you that you can go to justcoffee.coop and order some coffee, order some tea, some chocolate, and put Majority in the coupon code, get 10% off. So let me tell you something, folks. Mark Maron, incidentally, his podcast was number 2 on iTunes last week. Huge. But now that I have the same microphone as Mark Maron, understand the war is on. He's mad at me. He won't come on the show. He won't come on the show now. He's mad. He's mad at me. But we'll see what happens now that I have a quality microphone. What's so funny?
I'm just looking at the at the video replay. It's humongous.
The microphone.
It's enormous.
Yeah, it is a massive microphone. Yeah, I think we're going to have to bring back the boom maybe for this thing. Because, you know, why not?
I mean, it looks like you're going to do damage with that microphone.
Oh, my God. Number 2 podcast. And this week, the January employment numbers came out, and there was sort of a contradictory numbers. We saw the unemployment rate drop from 9.4% to 9%, which on one hand looks very encouraging. However, we saw the job growth numbers at an anemic 36,000, as reported by the Establishment Survey. These are two different surveys. What makes up? And then remember, you need 140,000 jobs at least to maintain parity. And I think we had some government job losses as we see cities and states begin to feel the squeeze on their budgets and laying off personnel. So this is somewhat confusing. Dean Baker has written a piece that basically explains it. It's quite simple from his perspective. Of course, he's an economist. The household survey, which is the one that shows that that's the rate that we talk about, what the employment rate is. And I should add that one response from some people was that, well, people have simply fallen off the rolls. They're no longer being counted. The Bureau of Labor Statistics has sort of pushed back on this, saying that their population revision skews the data to make it appear this way, but in reality, 589,000 more people found jobs. So this is really, really unclear. But Dean Baker says the household survey is always erratic. It is effectively measuring the level of total employment in the economy. And even if it's off by just 0.2%, this implies an error of almost 300,000 people. And January is especially prone to show out-of-line numbers because of seasonal adjustments. January is just a very weird year. I mean, weird month, I should say. And he goes on to say, this is why economists familiar with the two surveys tend to rely much more on the establishment survey. This survey is benchmarked every year to the state employment insurance data, which is a virtual census since it covers all employers in the country. Those desiring a third source of data on labor market could have looked into the data on unemployment insurance filings. The four-week average stands at 430,000. The economy did not start generating jobs on a consistent basis following the last recession until claims fell below 400,000. So you're hearing a lot of happy talk that we're out of the woods. The economy's growing. All is well, ladies and gentlemen. Meanwhile, we're seeing corporate profits go through the roof. Yet they're not hiring more. The Wall Street Journal. Corporate profits are humming. Dividend increases are up sharply, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average is back above 12,000. It makes job growth the missing link as the U.S. economy mounts a rebound. 73% of Standard & Poor's 500 stock index by market value having reported fourth quarter results. Earnings are up 28% from a year earlier, and sales are up 7.7%. I think New York State had consumer confidence was up at a level that has not been seen since 2007. And so what is the reason for this? Well, often job growth is a lagging indicator of a rebounding economy. But the one thing that's clear from this is that the idea that the reason why corporations and businesses are not hiring is because they don't have tax breaks, they don't have enough money to hire more people, is clearly bullshit. The reason why we're not seeing more jobs created is because of a lack of demand. And the reason why we have a lack of demand is simply because we are stuck, mired in this cycle, and what we need is government to step in and provide stimulus. And what we are now about to enter is a period of negative stimulus, because we're seeing attempts by the Republicans and, frankly, some Democrats to contract the size of government, to diminish the amount of money that is going into the system. The idea that we are tightening our belts so government should do the same is absolutely ridiculous. We wouldn't say the same thing about business. I mean, no one out there thinks that, okay, families are having to contract, so we want businesses to contract too. You cannot make the analogy. Government is not another player in our economy. The government is one player that can do something that no other players can. They can deficit spend. We are not Greece. We cannot default. The only danger is that we would spur some type of out-of-control inflation if we printed too much money to meet our obligations. But we cannot default like Greece can. Greece does not have their own currency. So this notion that somehow we want government to tighten belts as if it's some type of moral equation. It's like two five-year-olds or a five-year-old and a seven-year-old. Well, Johnny doesn't, it's not, gets dessert. I want dessert. Or I'm not allowed to get dessert, so Billy shouldn't. That's not how it works. But this is what is being sold to us for both ideological reasons and because it's being sold to us by very wealthy people who want the government to function in their interests, who rely on government not necessarily who rely on government spending in areas that are not so obvious, like having Immigrations and Customs go after websites that are aggregating other sites that may somehow infringe upon their ability to make more money. And what's interesting, as we hear more of this oncoming austerity, or people positioning themselves, you hear Claire McCaskill has come out and joined Republicans in something called the CAP Act. And what is the CAP Act? It's a legislation that would reduce federal spending from the present level of 24.7% of the nation's gross domestic product down to what was described as a historical level from the, literally from 40 years ago. 30 some odd years ago, I should say, of 20.6 GDP. So this is not accounting for any type of inflation. It's not accounting for any type of wars. It's not accounting for anything. And it would, the really horrific element of this CAP Act is that it would impose, if these levels are not reached by Congress, and of course they won't, because no Congress, certainly not the Republicans. When we saw the Republicans in office, they increased spending hand over fist. The CAP Act, as written by Ed Kilgore, and this guy, Ed Kilgore, was a former DLCer. He's now sort of an apostate, but he still remains somewhat far more fiscally conservative than I would prescribe to. He says this craziness. Well, he says the problems of this CAP Act begins with its title, which reflects the current Republican line that government spending is somehow the only obstacle to a booming economy. Well, that's just ridiculous. The craziness comes from the central idea that the total federal spending needs to be immediately lower and inflexibly limited to a fixed percentage of GDP that's lower than the levels of the Reagan administration. As a long analysis from Paul Van de Water of the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities points out, the sort of cap is not only arbitrary, but it does not reflect the aging of the U.S. population, which inevitably increases retirement costs. In other words, there are real costs that we have to deal with based upon our current situation. It doesn't reflect the recent spike in healthcare costs or the automatic increase in government spending that occurs during a recession. In other words, more poor people, more need for things like food stamps, and the basic need in a democracy for representative institutions to make decisions on taxes and spending. Reaching the target proposed in this bill would involve reducing federal spending, all of it, by about 20% as compared to current levels. So much for Washington having any ability to deal with the challenges to the country, domestic or international. The idea, so to speak, is to respond by the inability or unwillingness of Congress to identify specific program cuts by administratively cutting every single program by the same percentage. In other words, this is a total abdication of these so-called deficit hawks to actually point out what spending levels we want for certain programs. And this is important because they want to do this in a way that does not reflect the will of the American people. And so they abdicate, they back into this by putting an across-the-board mechanism which will perform this task on their behalf. It would include mandatory spending, basically Social Security and Medicare, in the sequestrations. In other words, Social Security and Medicare would be cut automatically by 20%, regardless of the needs of those programs. So under the system, one fine day, without a single vote being taken in Congress, Social Security beneficiaries would see reductions in their checks necessary to achieve some arbitrary level of annualized savings. Doctors would see their Medicare reimbursements docked. Medicare beneficiaries would see their premiums jump. Now, Kilgore assumes that this will never take place anyways, because Republicans don't want to see this imposed upon military spending. But he argues that Democratic sponsorship of such measures offers Republicans a specific concession they very badly want, and that President Obama denied them in a State of the Union address. Bipartisan cover to go after Social Security and Medicare, which they fear on their own because they are afraid, frankly, that the American public doesn't want it. And so this is very damaging to have Democrats out there squawking as these so-called deficit hawks. And just to give you a sense of what Americans would like to see cut. Now, I'm not on board, again, with this panic over the deficit. Like I said, we are not Greece. We cannot default. We have our own currency, which means that we can buy our own debt. In fact, much of our debt is actually held either by the Social Security Trust Fund, by other government agencies, or by institutions in this country. We collect taxes, which Greece seems to be unable to do for the most part. Tax evasion in Greece is somewhere around 35%. 35%. That's a huge chunk of revenues that you're not getting. And the idea that the dollar will plummet in value if we don't get our debt under control is almost irrelevant, because if that happens, we would become hyper competitive because we would be able to ship our goods overseas. We would buy nothing from the countries who rely on the U.S. for markets, and our exports would be wiping out competitors around the world. That doesn't happen with Greece. So we are in no danger of default. These apocalyptic notions that we could somehow just collapse is ridiculous. The only danger is that if we buy too much of our debt and our debt becomes less palatable to other countries, we have to raise our interest rates significantly. And this is something that can be controlled. Right now, we're at almost all-time lows in terms of interest rates. Do you notice when you put your money in a bank, you agree to leave it in there for 6 years, you get like 1.3% interest. So that aside, and maybe this is the wrong question to ask, but a University of Maryland study asked Americans, it brought in, I think, about 1,000 Americans to actually address the debt, and then the deficit, I should say. And according to the study, average Americans, when presented with the federal budget in some detail, are able to reduce the budget deficit dramatically and resolve the so-called Social Security shortfall. And that shortfall, of course, we know doesn't even take place for 30 years. Respondents cut the discretionary budget deficit projected for 2015, just 4 years out now, by 70%. 6 in 10 solved the problem of the projected Social Security shortfall through adjustments in payroll taxes, premiums, and benefits. The projected Medicare shortfall was also dramatically reduced. And now, I got to look deeper into this poll to exactly see how they describe the Social Security shortfall and what they consider it. But right now, Social Security is running a surplus. The trust fund's still running a surplus, and that's going to, in about 8 years, change, where it will be payroll taxes that will actually pay for Social Security for another 12 years. Excuse me, 22 years. The study was done by the Program for Public Consultation. Respondents were presented with 31 of the major line items of the discretionary federal budget with a description of each one, the amount budgeted for 2015, and the projected deficit. They were each given a chance to increase or decrease each item. You can actually take this, engage in this exercise yourself. We'll put a link up to it. On average, respondents made net spending cuts of $145 billion. The largest cuts included those to defense, $109 billion. Intelligence, $13 billion. Military operations in Afghanistan and Iraq, $12 billion. The federal highway system, $4.6 billion. So that makes up, of that $145, $140 billion cut up amongst those things. I mean, this is what happens when Americans take a look at this stuff. Now, you've seen the polls in the past that have suggested more or less these type of cuts. Something like only 20% of the American population wants to cut Social Security or Medicare. The vast majority was raise taxes or cut defense. On average, respondents increased revenues by almost $300 billion. The largest portion, $155 billion, came from increasing income taxes from the levels that are in place, right after we have just continued the Bush tax cuts. Majorities increased taxes on incomes over $100,000 by 5% or more, and increased them by 10% or more on incomes over $500,000. This is actually more aggressive tax raising than we would have had we left the Bush, had we repealed the Bush tax cuts. You understand, the American population wants to increase taxes even greater than would have been increased if we had allowed those tax cuts to expire. So when Claire McCaskill or these other Republicans get out there and start preening about cutting, why are they not doing what the American public really wants them to? Because they are more beholden to the wealthy. Majorities also increased corporate and alcohol taxes and turned to a new source of revenue, including the tax on sugary drinks. But we will hear over and over again that if you tax sugar water, corn syrup water, that we subsidize all of these drinks as it is now. You understand, we all subsidize them with our tax dollars. We give subsidies to make corn in this country cheaper to produce than it actually is to produce the corn. We are paying people to produce corn and then allowing them to sell it to soda companies so they can put water into it and sell it as a beverage, which causes obesity. That's our government policy as it stands now. And in addition to taxing sugary drinks, they want to tax carried interest, which is also known as the hedge fund manager's tax. When you see what the American public wants to do and what our leaders are willing to do, you realize who really is controlling them when it comes to this. When it comes to this type of policy, and this goes across party lines here. A plurality, 49%, favored a tax on carbon dioxide emissions. A sales tax was rejected by 58% of respondents. Good for them, because they realize a national sales tax is regressive. It hits poor people more than it does rich people. Because after a certain level, rich people just use their money to invest, and they don't buy things that are subject to a sales tax. Almost every dollar that a poor or middle class or even upper middle class person spends is to buy a product that they need at that time. And again, the estate tax, a majority, 77%, which is actually low when you consider the estate tax hits right now, less than 2% of the American population, favored reverting to at least the 2009 levels, taxing estates over $3.5 million at a 45% rate. Only 15% of respondents supported the estate tax levels at the recently passed. That's taxing estates over $5 million per person. So if you're married, it's 10, at a 35% rate. To say nothing of the extension of the gift tax, wherein you can give your children literally millions of dollars over their lifetime for free. Give, not buy them things. Just give it to them. Hide it, in other words. In terms of Social Security, 6 in 10 respondents selected enough steps to resolve the problem. And again, I need to dig in further, but you know, for the sake of argument, let's just assume that they are legitimately expressing the problem. And I have some doubts because we know from a combination of raising the minimum retirement age to 70 and getting rid of COLA, the cost of living adjustments, and in the way that they calculate the increase in benefit rates, that we would actually be looking at cuts of 35% to deal with benefits that would only reach 75% levels. In other words, we're dealing with a 35% cut to deal with a 25% cut, a projected 25% shortfall. The most popular approaches selected by large majorities called for raising the limit on wages subject to the payroll tax to at least $156,000. So if you had the ability to get rid of the cap totally, there would be no issue of Social Security. And some suggested raising the retirement age by a year. So there you have it. The American population has spoken as to what they would want for the deficit. Of course, they're not given the proper information to know that we're not Greece. We're going to take a break. I gave you an extra 10 minutes of show today, folks. So if you are not a member, you would have gotten that 10-minute bonus today. Members on the other side. And you non-members right now are getting a sense of what the other side looks like. But this will go away soon, so become a member as soon as you can at majority.fm. Got another story about the Ken Feinberg, the supposed independent czar. Wasn't there an outcry from the right wing? How'd you appoint this government crony to dole out BP money? Well, it turns out he's not a government crony. He's a BP crony. I'll take your IMs and more on the other side. Majority FM is my IM handle. We'll be right back. Oh, you know, before we get into that BP story, we had Mike Stark on this program just, I guess, last week. And I had mentioned that he used to call right-wingers call-in shows and really put it to them. And he's still doing it more as a hobby than anything else. But it was this was a fantastic exchange with Mike Stark and Rush Limbaugh. And, you know, the sound quality is not great. Mike Stark could work on this program. His sound quality is so poor sometimes. But, I mean, he could have, I should say. Because now we really are. It's the dulcet tones with this new Lindsey Graham. Oh, you missed that part, Dorsey.
Totally missed that.
The anonymous giver of this microphone, I said, what can I do for you? Let me send you some swag. You also have full naming rights to the microphone because I don't have his name. So, like, you know, we call the Sinclair after the Sinclair who gave it to us. You know, sort of he's sort of like one of the original five in Battlestar Galactica, and so we just refer to him as the Sinclair, and he gave us the Sinclair. The Sinclair was brought to us through the largesse of the Sinclair. And so I wanted a similar dynamic with the mic. And the email is Grandma Kittens. And I was like, should we call it the Grandma Kitten? Which would not have been bad. The Grandma, the Kitten, the G Kitten. And he or she, I don't know, I don't even know this person's gender, said, I would go for Lindsey Graham. Which, you know, when you see the size of this mic... It has disturbing connotations, so I don't know if we will stick with that. But as I was saying, Mike Stark, he called up Rush Limbaugh, and I tweeted this out multiple times. It got 1,200 retweets off of my tweet, and I did it a couple of times because it's so fantastic. Mike Stark gets on, and I asked Stark, did you lie to get on? And he said, no, 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 they'll put liberals on. And I said, no, no, I know that. I mean, I used to call into shows, local shows, and all you need to do is say, like, hi, I'm a Democrat, but I agree with what he's saying. And then you get on and go, you always start with, like, I totally agree with you, but, and then you proceed to disagree with everything, which is very much what Ronald Reagan did. You know, he would espouse certain things, but all his policies were not of that ilk, which is why... You know, and he was very successful in changing sort of a certain ideas that existed, although that his actions were very different from those. Well, I'm going to let Mike Stark go through the litany of these things because he asked a very simple question. And the reason why I asked Stark was because Limbaugh is so thrown off in this segment. He's completely flustered. And it's not like anything actually permeates the minds of these ditto heads. But Limbaugh does one of the worst jobs I've ever seen of trying to dismiss something. And because Stark was so nice and so polite, there was no toehold for Limbaugh to attack him. He just simply sort of like said, I can tell that nothing I say is going to change your mind. It's fascinating. Let's listen to this.
Reagan, I mean, amnesty. To people breaking the law and living in this country illegally.
Stop. Is this the beginning?
No, I cut a segment. You want me to run the whole
thing? No, yeah, run the whole thing. The whole thing. Hold on for 1 second. This is worth hearing the whole thing. It's a little bit long, but it's worth hearing the whole thing. I mean, it's just fantastic. Oh, and quick story while I got you here. Oh, well, as you know, Huffington Post acquired by AOL. We'll talk about that more. $300 million, $300 of it in cash, $15 million in stock. And George Bush, well, we'll talk about this more maybe tomorrow, but just briefly, I got to tell you a great story. Canceled his trip to Switzerland, ostensibly because he was afraid of protests, which seems ridiculous. But more likely, it appears, he's afraid of he won't be able to leave, that they could put him in prison. For torture. All right, do we have the Stark thing?
Yep.
Okay, let's play the whole thing. Mike Stark on.
And who's next? Mike, Falls Church, Virginia. Nice to have you on the EIB network. Hello, sir.
Hi, Russ. I'm calling because, well, first of all, I'm a liberal, and I seriously don't understand this Reagan idolatry on behalf of conservatives. I'll give you my reasons. Instead of privatizing Social Security, he raised taxes. We're all paying higher taxes today out of our paychecks every single week because he decided to save Social Security.
Hold it. I need to go.
The Greenspan Commission. He signed it into law, and it raised taxes on Social Security.
Wait, you're talking about Reagan or Clinton?
All right, pause it right
here. I'm talking about Reagan.
Can you pause it? Now, he seems completely befuddled by this because Limbaugh knows this is the case. I mean, we've talked about it on this program many times. The Greenspan Commission that was formed in 82-83 was charged with saving Social Security. It was in big problems right around then. And that was one time where Social Security actually borrowed money from the general fund. It's since paid it back and plus interest as of even the early – within, I think, like 5 or 6 years – but they raise payroll taxes to deal with this demographic bump that's happening right now. And Limbaugh, he's like, wait. Clinton? Can we say Clinton? Good.
What? Technical difficulties.
Yes, technical difficulties.
Associated with terrorists sending over and over again arms to Iran in exchange for hostages. By contrast, Jimmy Carter didn't give an inch to the Iranians.
What
not one
in the world?
Inch. Instead,
testing the true depth of my politeness here on this call, folks.
Say that again?
Let me ask you, a question. What do you think, given all this, that you believe when you hear Obama and the Democrats cite Reagan, as they have been doing since about a week before the State of the Union?
It's funny you ask that, because as a liberal, I think Obama owes his presidency to Reagan. They're both kind of stuffed suits that say one thing and then do another. Obama hasn't been anywhere near liberal enough for me. He said he'd close Guantanamo. He hasn't done that. He said he'd help people out with foreclosures.
I feel
for
you.
He hasn't done that.
Yeah.
But Reagan, I mean, amnesty to people that were breaking the law and living in this country illegally. He said, oh, forget about it. Just stay here forever. He cut and ran from Lebanon. How many hundreds of Marines were killed? And he just decided, well, you know, instead of fighting the bad guys, I'm going to run away.
Yeah.
Why is Reagan a hero to conservatives?
Why is Reagan a hero to conservatives? I don't think you'd, given what you've said, and I'm not trying to avoid the question, I don't think you'd ever understand it.
Stop it for a second.
Well, he's a tax raiser.
Stop it now.
An amnesty?
Given what you've said, I don't think you'll, I'm not trying to avoid the question. Yes, in fact.
I don't think so.
You are trying to avoid the question. That's exactly what you're trying to do. And you are signaling, I'm sure, with your hands to your producers. Like, what the fuck? Why didn't I have my talking points when you took this call? What's going on here? Now, watch where he goes now. Okay, watch where he goes now. He's got to get some boogeymans here, but Stark can't get his arm around it. Now, the other thing that Rush does not know, Stark's a former Marine. And so, you know, he could have gone and I'm, you know, Stark is bulletproof on this talking about the cut and run from just watch. This is interesting.
I don't think you'd ever understand it.
Well, he's a tax raiser, an amnesty giver, a cut and runner, and he negotiated with terrorists. Why is he a hero to conservatives?
I
don't think you understand it.
Oh, I do. Most assuredly I do. I don't think that you would understand it. Where did you get this silly notion that Reagan raised taxes on Social Security? What websites do you read? Where did you pick that up?
Look up the Greenspan Commission. It's not too hard to find. I mean, it's a matter of history.
Now, where did you get it? You're asking me questions. I'm just reversing one on you here.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's just general knowledge. It's something I've known for a long time. I can't remember where I got it from.
You can't really. You've never heard of a website called Media Matters, which highlighted it yesterday.
Oh, no, I know Media Matters very well, but that's not where I got it.
It's an amazing...
I mean, I'm a liberal, of course I know.
Amazing coincidence out there.
They're a fantastic website, but why are you dodging the question? I want to know why a tax-raising, amnesty-giving, cut-and-running, negotiating with terrorists guy is a hero to the conservative movement.
Well, because you understand Reagan in a way that is flawed. Your call is actually kind of interesting because you represent the impossibility of bridging the gap. Somebody like you just has to be defeated. There's no crossing the aisle and finding common ground with you. You're free to be who you are. Don't misunderstand it. I'm not trying to be insulting. You are unreachable. You don't want to be reached.
Okay, stop. What he's done is, you should know that he's now hung up on Stark. He's hung up on Stark. Stark has no opportunity to respond now, and he tried to sort of tie him with Media Matters, but he knew that he couldn't go anywhere because Stark just gets his general knowledge. I mean, this is not like a secret commission. Everybody knows this, and Limbaugh himself must know what he's referring to. In fact, he addresses it later. So he tries to smear him with, like, you're part of the evil. Who are you, George Soros? Are you George Soros's son? You know, as opposed to... And then he says, well, your understanding of Reagan is flawed. And you have a mental disease, and we can never bridge the gap with you. This way I can get as far away from your questions because my audience does not have the ability to maintain a thought in their head for longer than the 15-minute segments in which my ratings are based. And so I will vamp and vamp and then later get to it when people have forgotten the direct questions you've asked me, and I'm just going to keep going. Play this.
Free to be who you are. Don't misunderstand it. I'm not trying to be insulting. You are unreachable. You don't want to be reached. You have this picture of Reagan. You've just described somebody you should love. And you hate him. You just described somebody you should absolutely love. All these things. He's anti-conservative, as you say, but you don't. You're having trouble understanding why he's viewed as heroic to a lot of people. I could talk to you about anti-communism. You want to talk about amnesty? Yeah, that was Simpson Mazzoli, and that was 1.5-2 million illegals. And he was told, okay, if we're going to do this, this is it. Then we're going to secure the borders, and that's it. It's the same thing with every tax increase he signed. It was also accompanied by promises to cut spending. It never happened. Reagan's not perfect. Nobody is. But I think the proof of Reagan is the fact that when your guys get in trouble, who do they seek to associate themselves with? Remember, these people, Obama, these people are all about getting votes. The fact that he's trying to surround himself with Reagan, the fact that he's trying to position himself with Reagan, is the best indication anybody could have of what this country really thinks of Reynaldus Magnus. I think if you want to focus in on hypocrisy, you've got far more of it on your side of the aisle to explain and dig through than we do. I mean, Reagan was forced to raise payroll taxes by a crisis in Social Security in 1983. And he endorsed that rescue plan that was written by Alan Greenspan. It was reluctant. He was not a big supporter of that.
Okay, remember, that's Reagan enough. There you go. So there he is. Majority. All of a sudden now he knows what Stark is talking about. Because his producer gave him a sheet, or IM'd him, something that said, yes, this is what happened. He was forced to do it? Not the great Reynaldus Magnus! No one forces the great Reynaldus Magnus to do anything. He was reluctant. They held his pen. They had Nancy with a dagger to her throat. Reynaldus Magnus, no! Now, the thing is, he takes it into the weeds, and he says, it wasn't his fault. Yeah, there it is. The conservative victimization again. No personal responsibility. And I don't think Stark said anything about hypocrisy or anything like that. He was just curious. Why do you ignore this part of Reynaldus Magnus' history? In your praising of Reagan. Hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. You know what? I'm going to give one of these to Stark. That was one of the best calls I've ever heard. Meanwhile, this story was from last week. The administrator of the $20 billion compensation fund for Gulf oil spill victims is not independent from BP and must stop telling potential claimants that he is. It's according to a federal judge said in a ruling last week that may spur more people to sue rather than settle. U.S. District Judge Carl Biber said claims czar Ken Feinberg and any of his agents must change the way they communicate with people seeking money from the fund. So in other words, this $20 billion fund is set up. People come, they meet with him or his peeps, and they say, you know, I lost business because of this. I want some money. And they say, look, we're completely independent. Just know that when you sign this, you can't sue, but we're completely independent. You know, this is probably best for you. And it cuts at the heart of one of Feinberg's central arguments that because he's independent, thousands of people who have been denied money or received less than they feel deserve should trust his decisions. And these people obviously would sue. And I guess when you enter into this process, you've got to sign a waiver that says, we will not sue, we will abide by your findings. The judge said Feinberg must clearly disclose all communications that he's acting for and on behalf of BP in fulfilling its obligations to the responsible party under the Oil Pollution Act. Now tell me, Dorsey, does this come as a surprise to you? Who do you think that this guy Feinberg, Who do you think he worked for? Did you think the government was paying him? Did you think BP was paying him? Evan?
I assumed he was, you know, what do they call those? The independent...
Someone's got to be paying him.
Yeah, I assumed it was a government fund.
A government fund. Or maybe came out of that $20 billion. Turns out he was appointed last June by BP in the White House, which, you know, when he was trotted out, I don't remember him being appointed by BP in the White House. I remember him being appointed by the White House. His Washington law firm was paid $850,000 a month for its work through the middle of January, and now Feinberg is discussing with BP how much he should be paid going forward. That does not sound like he's independent to me. Anyone who accepts final payments from the fund have to sign a release form giving up their right to sue any party deemed responsible for the disaster. The lawyers have argued that those claimants should still be able to sue BP, this is the claimants' lawyers, for punitive damages and other companies for compensatory and punitive damages. So this was a little scam that there was not exactly a lot of sunlight under this process. Rather disturbing, no? Am I the only one who's disturbed by that? Huffington Post, acquired by AOL for $315 million. I wonder what people think of this. I've seen different responses online. I mean, there was always a sense that they would probably be bought, but they're starting to make money, so, you know, there was always a chance. I mean, one of the things that's disturbing to me about it is that one of the things I liked about it was that it was perceived as being independent of major corporate control. I mean, Arianna Huffington is not she's not chilling in Brooklyn, scrapping by, living in a converted loft in Dumbo, although those people are extremely wealthy now. She could be. But be that as it may, there was no sort of greater corporate entity that relied on its editorial to not cross certain lines or whatnot. And so that's somewhat disappointing. There are some people who make a case that, well, you're now sort of tying in this sort of free blogging into the greater corporate Borg. But the fact of the matter is that they have a lot of now paid reporting. Most of their hits comes from that paid reporting. In fact, the vast majority of their hits come from outside of the political news area. It's like Style and Entertainment and pictures of somebody's cleavage or that type of shit, which, you know, is fine. That subsidized the other side, and that's fine. And I am not one who feels that. You know, look, this show relies on, aside from people actually paying to put it on, but I rely on bloggers' free work all the time. Now, I'm not making the type of profits that the Huffington Post is, and I'm not necessarily making profits yet. There will come a time where I will be living a lavish lifestyle based upon this show, I have no doubt. And I will do so unapologetically. But the point is that I have members who support this show send me stories all the time. People who don't, who are not members, send me stories all the time. We have people posting to our Tumblr site for free. Avant. My gosh. And I should say, if you want to check this out, we're about to put up, I'm going to do it later today or maybe tonight. Avant has built an entire book and video store based upon guests that have come on this show where we get a commission every time you buy, up to $25, I think we get commissions on stuff. So every purchase that you make we don't get commission beyond the $25, but any purchase you make, you can buy through our Amazon link, which is on the Majority FM site. And soon you'll be able to buy books directly from the site, and we will get a commission. That's all Avant. Just did it. Sends me an email. Hey, I've done this. I hope you're not upset. Excuse me? Upset? Are you kidding? I was like, gathered my entire family around the computer. And I was like, look what this guy did. It's unbelievable. He has a complete guest page, too. It's unbelievable. And frankly, you get a lot more value if you're a blogger to post on the Huffington Post than you would if you posted on Majority FM, because they have hundreds of thousands of millions of people who visit it every day. And a lot of people cross-post on their blogs. So I'm not as concerned about that model. We're moving into a new media landscape, and it's hard to make the adjustment. But, I'll be giving out 40 minutes of material free every day, completely free, with a minimum of sponsorship. That's just the new reality. And this was a job I got paid for quite well when I was doing radio. But there are other benefits I get in terms of I'm free from certain aspects of that medium. I guess that's about it, other benefits. I get to set up the office any way I want. I don't have to work with Mark Green. All of that is a positive. And I got to say, you know, there's some great reporters there. And, you know, some argument is that, well, AOL, now we're getting more liberal perspective because guys like Sam Sein and Nico Pitney and a lot of the reporters over there are very liberal. And now they're into an echo stream that, like, you know, my dad could pick up on AOL. So it cuts both ways, and so I don't know, but I will reserve judgment. I would have rather they stay independent, of course. Why not? Why not? But maybe this opens the door to another, right? I mean, now you've opened up a slight marketing niche.
Air America 4.0.
Air America 67.3. Go to the IMs at AOL bought HuffPost. Harold wrote that at 11:30. Todd Slater, Lindsey Graham. Yeah, awkward is right. I would definitely not want my mouth that close to the Lindsey Graham. Yeah, I'm not sure how sustainable it is, this Lindsey Graham thing. That just may not happen. I may have to give you an opportunity to pick three names. And don't pick, like, John McCain. Jay Shivone, the after show could be called Behind the Wall or the Champagne Room. Champagne Room. I'd have to get some, like, sort of like slinky music. Welcome to the Champagne Room. Sound quality is crystalline. Did you do something? Sounds phenomenal. That is a function of the new Lindsey Graham. Simple answer as to why Reagan is a conservative hero is that he gutted the top tax rate. Therefore, underfunding government to the benefit and only of the richest Americans, like Rich Limbaugh. That's the answer, yes, and it can't be spoken. That is correct, don't be a putz. Like all of the U.S. policy supporting stability over democracy in the Middle East, that's why Hillary Clinton and other U.S. officials sound just as tongue-tied as Limbaugh when discussing Egypt. Al Jazeera has been doing to the U.S. media what Stark did to Limbaugh for weeks now. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. It's a very apt analogy. You know, the American public needs to wake up. And I don't know that they will. I don't know that they'll educate themselves. And this is what we're dealing with. At the end of the day, this is a problem because we have a bunch of unknowledgeable people in this country. When they're sat down to do a study to fix the deficit, really what I'd like to do is have a study where they sit in a room with James Galbraith for 25 minutes and he whips out a chalkboard for him and explains to him why the deficit's not an issue. What happens then? But we have a thoroughly uneducated public and a media that does a shit-ass job of educating them, even on the most basic level. And so, yes. This is a problem. Josh, yeah, new mic sounds great. Josh is always very critical of the show. Josh Orton, former Majority Report producer, always very critical. Eh, I heard your interview. I thought you probably shouldn't have asked that last question. Went a little long. What? That's the takeaway. Mike sounds great, but you might want to do some voice lessons. Defeatocrat. Ah, Todd Slater makes the move. I don't think you said anything about AL HuffPo. I just did. Never mind, you just mentioned it. Crystal Count. What's Mark mad at Sam about? Mark feels that I've been, because he gets emails from people who say that I'm saying mean things about him as a way of getting under his skin. And then he's like, well, what's the matter? I mean, it's not as important to me that he comes on the show. I mean, I just want him to come on for fun. And particularly when we launched, when I asked him, which was 3 months ago, it'd be fun. You come on the first week. The last time I was doing any project was with you. The last project you did before WTF was with me. I thought it would be fun. Yeah, I don't know. All right. And now he's got the number two podcast. And I got news for you. I don't know what the number one podcast is, but I've talked about Jon Stewart on this program. I've talked about Adam Carolla, probably, or Howard Stern. I talk about comedy all the time. I said, what, I'm not supposed to talk about your show now?
Do you think it has something to do with your impression of his voice?
I'm sorry. This is what comes with the massive success, Marc Maron, is that the little ankle biters like myself will nip and nip and pick and pick. Hi, Johnny. Steelers lost. Oh yeah, I forgot to mention the Super Bowl. Did you see that halftime show?
Oh my God,
that was sort of insane. Okay, business. Now this is embarrassing. This is embarrassing. I don't know who those four people were.
You're okay with
that? Yeah,
that's okay.
That's not embarrassing.
Do I not? I mean,
it's no, more I mean, embarrassing. They're probably one of the biggest selling acts in the world. But
are they one act? Because I thought it was like a super group they were putting together.
It's what they are, basically.
Who are they?
It's the Black Eyed Peas.
Oh, is that the Black Eyed Peas?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're kidding.
No joke.
Disappointing, huh?
That's the Black Eyed Peas?
Yeah.
I guess the only exposure I had was from that whole, didn't they do a video for Obama or something?
Will I Am did.
And was he the one with the plastic head?
Yes.
Yeah.
Don't any of these people have management? Like, doesn't somebody say, hey, like, Will, can I talk to you over here? Dude, do you really want to wear that? It's Tron, man. It's Tron. That's what it's supposed to be, right, Tron?
Yeah, I guess.
It was supposed to be a halftime show.
You know what I would have liked to have seen is if they all got dressed in, like, just directly, forget about, like, sort of like the, what was it, the Bridgestone halftime hour?
Yes.
Yeah.
I would have liked to have seen if, like, they were all just wearing, like the version of, like, the Chiquita Banana, but just did different products. Like, one guy comes out as a Chevy. One guy comes out as, you know, Metamucil. Another guy comes out in a Bud Light can, you know, and just do it that way. At least then there would be some measure of irony for the rest of us. And then they brought, what's his face, out of the ground.
literally out of the ground.
Yeah, and I gotta say that Axl Rose looks much younger than I remember, but also more feminine. But it looks like he's been working out. And you know what? His voice has not been kind to him at the time, because he sang that Sweet Child of Mine, and it sounded horrible. But he looked much younger.
Wasn't Fergie singing that?
And more effeminate. So, I gotta say, that was a very weird. I liked the thing with all the green suits, but then I had to fast forward. Because, you know, I stayed like 5-10 minutes behind on everything because I didn't want to see the commercials. And the game was pretty good. I thought the game was pretty good.
Game was good.
I mean, I'm not emotionally invested in it, so it's not the same for me. But I actually think it's more interesting to see. I guess it's not for others, but like the Steelers are like, I think, one of the closest to an NFC type of team. Like, those are two teams that I can understand the allure because they both came from very sort of like, you know, blue collar type of, you know, hardy Midwestern type of towns. But I don't know. In the end, I didn't give a shit. I was more, you know, I had Al Jazeera. I was more interested in that. There's a revolution going on. Yeah, but there's a fucking Bridgestone with these four guys dressed like they're from. Is their music that bad? I was shocked. I think there was something wrong with the mix or something. Like,
the music was that bad, but also whoever was running sound was clearly, like, drunk.
It was really painful to hear.
They used to do lip syncs. They should just, for acts like that, it should just be a lip sync.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they should play a different band.
Well, that's
while they lip sync. That Sweet Child of Mine thing was really upsetting. Mm-hmm. And disturbing. You know, I wasn't so thrilled by the Who. There's no, you know what I would rather see is just some like cool marching bands.
I liked Prince a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I guess it just, you know, it's just sort of like always awkward just to have some, you know, why not have it like be something like are we really lacking for that type of shit in our society? I mean, I don't know.
They couldn't get Bieber. So they went with the Black Eyed
Peas. I mean, why not like get like, you know, like some really cool high, you know, college bands.
Yes. Yeah,
and I love marching bands. Avant, Lindsey Graham sounds great. How is it having your lips so close? Avant says, name the mic Bonair.
The Bonair.
It's no. Are you calling the post show the other side?
I'm rooting for the champagne room. That's pretty good.
The members only champagne room. I don't know. Folks, I should remind you. You know, I've got to make a list of things, of house cleaning things. See, I forget. But the donate your account has been picked up by Best of Left, and I got an email from the Young Turks guy, and they're going to pick it up. And that's really going to, it's going to go crazy. So, folks, if you can, if you can't be a member, many of you who are hardship cases, who are going through some tough times, if you email me at majorityreporters@gmail.com, we've got a bunch, but I'm happy to do it if you're genuinely going through tough times. I don't want anybody to make a decision between food or medicine, schooling, you know, to be able to listen to the full show. The live show will never be sequestered. But either way, become a, you know, follow us on Twitter, post our stuff on Facebook. If you're on other chat boards, on other radio shows or internet shows, you know, talk us up. There's, you know, that's how you came to those shows, is you heard them from somewhere else. And not looking to, you know, steal people's audience, but there's plenty of room. This, you know, in time shifting, you can listen to the show at any time, and it is a big help. A lot of people don't realize I'm back on because I haven't been able to reach those people. And Josh says you should call the mic the Marin. That I like. I would have to get permission from the giver of the mic, or the one who gave the mic. The one who gives the mic, but I would love to call it the Marin. That would actually be really funny.
I like that.
Because this is when I—that's when I fell in love with this mic. I saw the Marin's piece in the New York Times, and yeah, I saw him with that mic, and I was like, "Wow, oh God, what is that mic he has?" That's why his show sounds so good. And I emailed Brendan. I was like, "What's the name of that mic?" And I've been on it since then. And he or she who had sent me the mic, I may just say she. Must have heard that. Dradmanthes. Sorry if I mentioned this already, but do you know if it's true that journalists are now being required to register with the Interior Ministry in order to enter Tahrir Square? Yes. I have heard that. Holy shit, Reagan's not perfect. Rush just destroyed a superhero for all Republican boys and girls. I guess not being perfect is another thing Reagan and Obama have in common. Read Super Bowl. Forgot to give a shout-out to my California Golden Bear, Aaron Rodgers. Go Bears. Don't care about Packers. Understood. Good story for that kid. I'm glad.
He went to community college, where I should have gone to community college before he went to...
Did you go to college?
For a minute, yeah.
For 1 minute?
Almost a minute.
You could have been playing football for the Packers, maybe.
No.
No. Spayoff, I wouldn't think HuffPost should change much since they have put Arianna Huffington in charge of the editorial content. Yes, but look, when you're in these machines... you never know where the point of friction can come. And look, it's not just a question of her standing up to it. It's also, you know, we won't promote this, we won't promote that. You know, even when somebody goes to MSNBC to do a show, they put requirements on you, and then you're forced to make a way, you know, a judgment. Am I going to give up this platform because of something this tiny? I mean, we all make these calls at all times, and sometimes they're financial, sometimes they're access calls, and the only way to avoid them is to not be in that position. At the same time, you know, you're not in that position. I don't know. It's a tough call, and I'm willing to pass judgment on some instances, but, you know, we have to wait and see in this case. Daddy says, hang. Take a look for the CCR press release on the indictment they filed in Switzerland against GW, the real reason he canceled the trip. You know what? We got to have somebody on from that, from the Center for Constitutional Rights. 648, it should be kept in mind that the rich aren't really acting in a sane way. The war on the middle class actually cost them in the long run. Healthy middle class is the goose that lays the golden eggs for the rich. What I don't understand is why they're so stupidly short-sighted. Well, look, everybody is short-sighted. Everybody is. We can't deal with climate change. Of course, income inequality in this country hurts the country in the long run. Having a bad environment hurts rich people as much as it does poor people, but they feel like, well, we have the resources to deal with it. Short-sightedness has never been... you know, low in stock in anybody, I should say. New mic sounds great. Why is Marin mad at you? I think I already answered. Please ask guy off camera to speak up. His low talking and mumbling. Yeah, guys, on the mic, louder.
Which one of us you think it is?
I could hear Dorsey breathe that time.
Yeah. I usually hear Dorsey scratching.
Both you guys. Kevin, 11721. Ladies and gentlemen, your latest Majority Report member. David, Sam, do you want me to set up a shirt store? Send you the PW and info when done? Yeah, we're not sure what kind of store I want to set up. So let's hold off on that. I think we could probably Spreadshirt, I've heard good things about. Zazzle. Pfluger, cap budget deficit plan sounds like a chemotherapy to address an autoimmune disorder. Yep. Likely to make matters much worse. Absolutely. Post-show, Majority Report B-side. You got to pay to hear the bonus content.
I like that.
Take you to the B-side. Members only B-side. I like that. Write that down. Will you start a collection of names? B-side so far. Although it sounds like it's less than the A-side. How about the Majority Report B-side? Not a reflection of quality.
Not a reflection of quality. It's simply a simple way of denoting the second part of the show.
I think some of the best songs were the B-sides on their original singles.
All right, touche. American Success Story. Skip college and apply yourself, and you too could be pulling down the big bucks at Pilot Season Inc. Dorsey, somebody was knocking you.
I'm not listening anymore. I'm trying to focus on whether or not I should mumble or speak clearly and blow this microphone out.
Maxercise says the Marin or Maxercise, the post area. Do you not suggest that every day? You suggested that Tuesday, February 1st. I can see your chat history. Kevin Semicolon, how about what the fuck with Mark Maron post show? That would actually be pretty funny. Stay tuned for WTF. We should put the post show up as WTF, like a special WTF. Can we put that into our meta tags? Maybe we should put like a lot of
like technically
break room live stuff into our.
I mean, I could put WTF in every video tag. Ever from now
Super
on.
Super Funk, love the breakdown of the Limbaugh call. More of that, please. Are you going to talk about the Obama-O'Reilly interview, or did I miss that? Oh, I didn't even see. Did I miss that? How was it?
I didn't see that.
All I heard on Twitter was football, football, football.
Yeah, I didn't even hear anything about it. I'll check it out.
No, like they talked.
I know that was happening.
Football. It was just.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, it was very chummy and.
Majority Report, director's cut. I like B-sides so far. B-sides have always had some hip cachet in the world of 45 RPM re-kids. Yeah, that's right. But I would say half the audience just said 45? What does that mean? Harold, Black Eyed Peas have never been good. It did seem to be an attempt to out-desperate last year's act. Christina Aguilera also messed up the national anthem, I heard. I wasn't watching. Don't be a putz. I caught Ring of Fire this weekend. Nice. Only Pap can call somebody a pimp and still come off as classy. You could call the Mike the Marin. That is starting to gain some traction. Yeah. Defeatocrat, offer some t-shirts ASAP. I want a full-color Uncle Sam on that t-shirt. Yeah, actually, that would be a great t-shirt.
Yeah.
Crystal Count, B-side from where B is big time. Hey, we got to go back and look and see who did the Uncle Sam thing. We got to put just like a little bit of label maybe on underneath it if we put it on a T-shirt. Well, I guess Dorsey's Community College Choice is the kind of personal story that the Young Turks would really try to exploit for a post-show chat. Maybe you should save it post his question. Who was it that was supposed to go to Butte Community College? Dorsey? Can we hear more about that?
I went, but it sucked, so I stopped going. And then I went again because I had a girlfriend who said she couldn't imagine herself with anybody who was not enrolled in school at the time. So I went to school. But
that has to be the single worst reason to go to college.
It was a dumb reason. But I did have a couple of cool classes. A really good jazz appreciation class that I aced. And a geography class that taught me where I should and should not live in San Francisco in case of the earthquake.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Huh.
Do you regret not going to college now?
No. There you go. Only when I'm at parties when it's like, so where'd you go to school? I'm just like, next.
Would it be a waste of time for me to write a song pleading Mark Maron to come on your show? That on one hand pays him respect, while on the other hand mocks him mercilessly for being a hypocrite during his Gallagher interview? are you asking if we would play it? I think if it was like 40 seconds or less, we would play it on the post show. Yeah. I mean, the post area and do some of your old calls. Oh, yeah, we'll get into that. We just got to. Zazzy quality is not great, but there are more options. Okay. Dorsey sounded good on the mic. All right, folks, that is our show for today. Tomorrow on the program, I think we're going to have Stephen Elliott talk about his new Rumsfeld book. Awesome. So psyched.
That's great.
Stephen Elliott from the Rumpus. And now he's like, his book, The Adderall Diaries, is going to be made into a movie, or was bought, the rights were bought by Franco, that guy James Franco.
Oh, wow.
And so,
good for him.
Elliott, longtime friend of show. I knew this guy back when Karl Rove was trying to hit on him at the RNC in 2004. All right, folks, we will see you tomorrow. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. And I'm shifted into you while I shifted in and out of you. Pilot light shining bright.